Hey, and welcome to the Android Central podcast for Monday, October 7th, 2019. Is it Monday, September, October 7th? I don't even know anymore. It's Techtober. That's all I know. And we got a special edition of the episode of the pod this week. Daniel Urbino from Windows Central's here. How you doing?
Hello. I'm doing quite well. Recovering, though.
Yeah. Last week was a little busy.
Yes.
Busy for you. And speaking of busy, the man who is always editing something special for your eyeballs, Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile, welcome back.
The man with full hard drives. Hey, man. Thank you for having me.
You actually said that before the episode started. Like, I don't know if I have enough hard drive space. So what's up with that? You're Mr. Mobile.
Yeah, just filling up all the buckets with all the terabytes. That's what I do. That's what I do, Ben.
What, like, just anecdotally, what is the average video, what's the average video size for a Mr. Mobile video? Like, how much does it all take up at the end of the day?
Yeah, the completed video is usually about 8 gigs because it's a 4K 60 file. The stuff that goes into that is usually 60 to 70 gigs. And it's usually, it's usually about 3 hours of work per completed minute of video.
Wow.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Rubino, you're also doing a bunch of video. So how's that going for you?
Not so much me. I just sit on, I'm just a star. I just show up.
You're just the talent.
Ideally, I'm supposed to be editing my own video, but that's baby steps there. I've got too many other things. But eventually I'll take a summer course on how to become Mr. Mobile. And then, yeah.
Well, you got the personality for it. You just need to sink into Premiere because you can't use Final Cut. That's what's keeping Michael on Mac OS, right?
That's exactly right. I'm coming to you from a MacBook Pro that has a stained monitor because it's delaminating or something. I don't know what's going on. It's the worst machine ever.
So, yeah, I just brought my MacBook in.
Yeah, you did?
I just did on the weekend, because the O button keeps doubling.
Oh, yep. My spacebar doesn't work. Very nice.
Yeah,
great machine.
It's fun. So let's actually talk about Windows, because even though there's a bunch of Mac and iPhone and whatever stuff, that's not what we care about right now. We care about Microsoft, and in particular, we won't go through everything. Obviously, you guys on the Windows Central podcast last week covered all of the announcements, the Surface Laptop 3, the Surface Pro 7, the Surface Pro X, which seems really exciting. And actually, I do want to get your quick thoughts on that one, because it's the first ARM-powered Surface. But I want to spend most of this episode talking about the Surface Duo and just the theory behind it, right? You guys have seen all the takes. You've listened to Panos Panay talk extensively about why Microsoft is getting into the not a phone game. You know, it's a phone, but it's not a phone. Daniel, let's start with you. What do you think, you know, this was the only thing that really didn't leak in any major way, right? It was hidden perfectly. How did Microsoft do it? Like, what actually went on behind the scenes to make sure that the Surface Duo stayed secret?
So I actually have this, we figured this out. So what happened was, in 2016, our senior Windows editor, Zach Bowden, started reporting on Microsoft working on a dual screen phone-like Surface device called Andromeda. And so we, going back like 3 years ago, we had rumors of this, and we've been covering it ever since. It's progress. And then around sometime last year, it was Mary Jo Foley had this report saying basically Andromeda is dead, or that it's being put on the shelf, and they're instead making a larger version, which became what we saw this week as Surface Neo. Its code name was Centaurus. And that was the rumor. It was going to be a Windows device, and it was going to be basically a bigger version, and that they were going to try this bigger version first. And, you know, if there was demand and the ecosystem kind of built up, they would go back to Andromeda, where it would make more sense. It would be a proper kind of phone in the sense that it could actually make calls. But Zach kept hearing that, no, they're still working on the hardware for Andromeda. Like, it's still kicking around. But so we're confused about that. And then there was a report that, Centaurus, the bigger device again, was going to actually run Android apps somehow. And this was the emulation thing, which Microsoft had a history of doing. And what turned out was a bunch of these rumors. This is what always happens with rumor reporting. You only get part of the story. It's like the whole elephant in the room and you're blind, whatever. You only get part of the story. And so what actually happened was, and this is what we're pretty certain of, the Andromeda hardware was kept being worked on for the last 3 years. In fact, the reporting has come out now that, yeah, we've been working on this for 3 years, exactly lining up with what Zach said. But what happened was the Windows team was pulled off of Andromeda at one point in the last year, and they created a new Android team to basically work on this hardware. So that's where the rumor came that Andromeda was basically put on back burner or canceled or whatever. It was the Windows team was like, oh, we're off that project, so we guess it's not working. And that's where our leaks came from. But Zach kept hearing the hardware was still being worked on. And so it wasn't that Centaurus is going to run Android apps. It was that Andromeda is Android. And I want to clear that up because some people think it's a new Windows 10X running Android. It's not. It's straight up Android. They're working with Google on the Android operating system for this. So that's how they're able to keep it secret. It was a different team that was basically working on this just for the last few months. And so that's why they're able to kind of keep it a surprise. So kudos to them. I mean, I was actually glad it didn't leak out because that was one heck of a moment.
Yeah, same. That was a really big reveal and I was happy not to be spoiled by it.
So you both got to handle it. I mean, it's a prototype and it's not coming out for a year or so, but how does it feel? Does it feel like a product that you, once it will be available, will want to buy?
I was blown away by the quality of the hardware. So in the sense of, there's two things here. When you see it in the video, especially we're talking about Duo, the smaller, the actual phone, it looks a little bit larger and maybe like, oh, that may be kind of cumbersome. In person, having seen it and held it and actually, you know, flexed it with the screen and everything with the hinge, it's, for one, it's very thin. It's remarkably thin, which, of course, raises questions about battery life. You're powering two displays, which now the displays aren't huge. They're, 5.6 inch each for 8.3 inch total. So these aren't like huge displays. We don't know the resolution. They wouldn't tell us that. But they are very, very thin. And so the best way I can describe how it feels is basically like a passport. Take a U.S. passport, maybe slightly larger. I haven't measured a passport, its actual size, but it felt like similar to that, where a passport can kind of slip into your front pocket, a little large, but it'll still get there. But just imagine now it's glass and metal. So it's got Gorilla, well, I believe it's probably Gorilla Glass on the outside, and of course, glass displays. But then it also has sort of metal for the hinges and various parts of it. It felt so premium, though. The hinge, the way it opens, is just very smooth. And we've heard it internally. This is almost basically the third version of this device. They've been working on it for so long. So it's a very refined hardware. USB Type-C, has a fingerprint reader on the side, volume up controller. It just feels, I thought it felt remarkable. Surface Neo, the larger one, also felt super premium. But you're talking a much larger device that, you know, it felt, I would say, like Apple premium, where it's that dense glass metal combo that just feels really premium, but also, you know, like a real solid device.
Yeah. Michael, what was your impression?
I had to get mine from Bino. I wasn't allowed to touch it. So I was 6 feet away from with the masses, throwing elbows, trying to get a look at it. But you know, it occurs to me that I've never thought about the size differential, though, because I'm using a Galaxy Fold as the sidekick for this podcast to keep up with my notes. And that's only like a 7.2 inches across on the primary. When you open up, that's the display. And I understand the aspect ratios might be different, but that is plenty of room for me to do what I need to do and feel like I'm holding a tablet and not a phone in, you know, the good ways. So having another inch of diagonal space, regardless of the aspect ratio change and the seam, which I guess we'll talk about in a second, I think that's going to lead to plenty of acreage for you to do what you want to do.
Right. And there's so much discussion around whether this is a foldable or two screen, you know, display, a hingeable, somebody called it. Like,
yeah,
this is not really a foldable phone in the traditional sense, but we don't have a traditional foldable phone yet. You know, there is no such thing. It's a nascent category. So the hemming and hawing I've seen is like the band down the middle, the hinge separates these two distinct displays, as opposed to the Fold, which, once you unfold it, is just one large display. How do you see that playing out in the real world, as especially on Android, where you know you'll be able to stretch an app across both screens? But I think Microsoft is really positioning this as a two-app side-by-side experience, right? A multitasking first experience.
As well it should, right? Because, I mean, have we've all played, I don't know about you, Rubino, we've all played with the Axon M, though, right, from CTE. That was a lot of fun for a dual screen, or excuse me, for a multi-app at the same time experience, because, yeah, you can do one app on one screen, one app on the other, and that makes sense, and you have all these possibilities. But the minute you go full screen with one app, I have to say that that seam down the middle is... It's not just apparent. I mean, it's quite disruptive when you've used a foldable phone. So I really do wonder how people are going to react to that, how normal people are going to use it.
It's a pretty, I mean, considering the seam, it's pretty minimal compared to what I've seen of other devices. But yeah, it's something you, I mean, it looks more like a book in the traditional sense. Now, Microsoft does have a patent out there, and I don't know if it's being used on this device, where the glass curves inward, where the seam is, just like a book, how paper will kind of curve inward. They have a patent where it controls, normally light would then shoot out the curve based on the angle of that curve. But they have like a patent that redirects the light basically straight back up so that it's supposed to make it more less observable that the screen is curving in at that point. I don't know if that tech is in this yet, but it didn't really bother me. But yeah, I mean, it's a trade-off, right? Until we figure, because the benefit of the Microsoft approach, of course, is dual glass screens that can ink and is a lot more resilient and won't break long term. And it does lend itself to this dual screen approach, which I should point out, this is something that they showed us internally that was really interesting, was they have their, what they call the Human Factors Lab at Redmond's campus. I've been there before. It's really cool. It's where they do all this testing of their hardware for how humans use it, including the Xbox controller, how it's gripped and everything like that. And so what they did was they did a cognitive study where they used electroencephalography. Basically you can think of as a hairnet that goes on with electrodes that measures brain activity. And it gave subjects a dual screen device, a foldable device, a single screen foldable, or just a single screen device, and have them complete workloads on it, basically checking emails, browsing, opening links, and doing all that kind of stuff. And from this study, they were able to see that those who used a dual screen device, like the Duo, had a lower activation on neural activity, signifying basically it was easier for them to do the task. They also matched that up with user experience reports, basically what the person self-reported on the experience. And so they actually found that people using these dual screens found it easier to get work done. And that's where Microsoft's productivity play always comes into play here. So it's not sort of like just a theory or why they went with dual screen because of it's more pragmatic, which it is. But they seem to have the science behind them showing that this is actually a better approach to working on a phone. I think anyone who has a PC or a Mac and uses dual screens at home kind of feels that natively, right? So that's where I think this approach is coming from. Or even those who snap windows side by side, a feature that has now come to Mac OS too. Is it on Mac OS?
Yeah, as of today.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say, yeah.
But the counter-argument to that, of course, is that with a foldable screen, that can be anything if you want. Like, I'm doing it right now. You can snap Slack right next to WhatsApp. And, you know, you can make an artificial delineation if you want. But if you don't want it there, it doesn't have to be there. Whereas with a physical hardware that has a hinge there, it's like, well, this is there all the time, and you just got to deal with it.
So then, of course, the other benefit here, of course, is actually four postures that they describe, right? So when you open the phone, you have the full dual screen experience, but you can also wrap that screen around because it reverse folds and you just now have a single 5.6 inch display. And this also works for the Neo too. So it gives you just a single tablet experience, and then you open up, now you got dual, and then you can go to the other posture, which is a dual aspect for what they call composer mode. We have the keyboard on the bottom and the screen on the top. It can even act like a Nintendo DS. I think you could kind of do that with a foldable bit, but I think the longevity and pragmatics of this is just a lot easier on the Surface approach, but I don't know.
I think, like, high level, though, what's really interesting is that Microsoft did not decide to make the Surface phone, right? It didn't make an Android phone, a traditional, candy bar Android phone, right? It didn't make the metal and glass major, right, you know, big screen to compete with the iPhone and the Pixel and the Galaxy line, right? This is the future of mobile technology from Microsoft's perspective. And, you know, on the bigger screens, there's Windows 10X, and that we can talk about. But when they are acknowledging that we are going to move the hardware position forward with help from Google, and Google built foldable and hingeable into Android 10, you know, that is really interesting to me, because it acknowledges that we're at peak, you know, peak single screen. We yeah. can't really get much better, much more, a much higher screen to body ratio. What companies like Xiaomi are doing are literally folding the screen around itself, right, to give you a pebble. Yeah. And it's not a convenient solution, right? It's a solution in search of a problem. So this is, I find that so interesting that Microsoft is like, no, we're going to change it from the very beginning, and everybody else is going to have to catch up.
I mean, I've been trying to talk about this for years, which is, when you look at 2007, iPhone lands and really kind of changed the model of what smartphones were at that point, which was more like the Trio BlackBerry design. And that was done at a time where cell phones were still kind of hitting mainstream, right? And by that point, everybody sort of had a flip phone and it was becoming pretty regular. But then the smartphone kind of changed everything. And I remember fighting back against people back then who said, oh, why do you need to check your email and go, who cares? And it didn't make sense to people. But now if you look at how phones work in 2019, like making calls on them is actually, and for myself, it's like the fourth or fifth thing on the list of things I use my phone most for.
Eighth or ninth. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, I use it for, of course, cameras. I use it for messaging, email, triage for work, all these other things you're using it for, Instagram, Yelp, you know, maps, all this stuff. So if you take what we know about how we use mobile technology today and you were to redesign that for the current user, what would a phone look like? And I've been saying this is what they've been trying to do for years. This is like, because it doesn't make sense. When people would tell me Microsoft should make an Android phone, I was like, but why? Why? How they would differentiate themselves? It didn't dawn on me that they would have do this dual screen one with Android at the time. But that's really what their approach is here, is like looking at where phones are going. And anyone who looks at Westworld and sees that tri-fold device that they have, everybody sees that, like, yeah, we want that thing. And so I think that's what they're just doing. And it's just how technology changes, right? It's an important conversation to have. It doesn't mean Microsoft's right, by the way. But that's what their approach is and what their thinking is to get ahead of the curve of where everybody's already going.
Can I ask you a question that I asked you over dinner but forgot the answer to, Rubino?
Yeah.
Were you able to see if the Duo can be put onto a desk as like a mini laptop? Is one side weighted more heavily than the other so that it can function as this tiny little laptop thing, or does it just wobble? Because that's one of the places I see Microsoft could get ahead of devices like the Fold, which can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know the straight up answer to that. It didn't feel, they're both symmetrical, the both have. So there isn't one side that seems heavier than the other, but I don't know that for sure. I will say the device is thin enough and light enough that I think if you put it at a 90 degree angle, I don't think it's going to tip over. Whether you tip that screen back now a little bit, whether it wobbles, I don't know.
Okay. So early opportunity to get to start an accessory business that is multiple use sticky pads for one side of this device.
Right. They saw, I mean, because with the Neo, that seems to be solved because it has a physical keyboard, which then sits on top.
Right.
And that would act as that counterbalance. But yeah, I'm not sure what the Duo, how that.
God, wouldn't that be so killer if Microsoft released an accessory that mirrored that accessory for the Neo, but on the Duo?
They
like,
could.
Didn't Samsung do that? Samsung did like a physical keyboard for the Note 9 or something, like a keyboard case.
Oh, right? I don't think it was the Note 9. I think it was like the Note 7
or something. Yeah. Anyway, I'm eager to see what accessories sprout up in the wake of this thing.
They'd come to their senses by the Note 9. I mean, they're not putting a keyboard accessory on the Note 9 after the Note 7, right? Like,
right.
They're like, we're done with gimmicks. We're done with this crap. We're just putting out a phone that won't blow up.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm interested in, Dan, like, this is an Android phone. It's partnering with Google. We're on the Android Central podcast, and I think a lot of people are interested in... nobody should argue, and if you're arguing, you're not reading the you know, the room, that Microsoft should have relaunched Windows Phone, right? Like, there's no question that they're making the right decision going with Android. There are the apps, and Microsoft needs apps.
That's Panay said that too. He said straight up, it's the apps. You need the apps, and Android has them. That's it.
So the Microsoft, I mean, I'm looking at this in light of the Mate 30, right? Where the Mate 30 cannot run Google services. They can't work with Google. They're shut out. Microsoft is actively kind of going that route where you have to put Google apps on the home screen. You have to have Google as the default search engine, but you can also, you know, thanks to a lot of antitrust stuff in Europe, put Edge on the home screen and make that the default browser. You can change the default search engine to Bing if you want. You can, you know, Microsoft Launcher is going to be there by default. This is, by all intents and purposes, a Microsoft phone running Android. When they start selling this alongside the Surface laptops, how are they going to position it? And especially when this is being sold at AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile, what is going to get people looking at this over a Galaxy or an iPhone?
Yeah, obviously, I think their push is going to be definitely with the productivity work thing, right? So, I mean, this is sort of the double-edged issue. Like, Microsoft has a ton of apps for Android. They do very well. They just hit a billion downloads on, I forgot which one. Oh, I think it was Word, I think, just hit a billion downloads. And so they also have Your Phone, which is a new helper app that links your phone to your PC so that if you're on your laptop and a call comes in or a message comes in, you'll get it on your laptop, just like how Apple does it with the iPhone and Mac OS. And so they have these sort of connections and this ability to, if you're in Word, your document syncs on your phone to the cloud, which is then on your PC. And of course, you have OneDrive to sync all your photos and materials over. And you have Edge, which runs on both devices and syncs your history between those two devices. You can send links back and forth. So they've been really working on this idea of sort of linking your phone to your PC. Now, that's not an exclusive Microsoft thing. Samsung kind of does this too. Dell has its own Kinect software. So they do have that tougher position. But the hardware itself, I think it's such, you know, I've played with the Mate X. I've played with the Samsung Fold. And it's all really good hardware. I'm glad these companies are doing this stuff. But when I picked this thing up, it just felt completely different on a different level. That's not saying, though, you know, Fisher's very aware of this, too, that, you know, there's a year to go between this thing comes out. So it's not like these companies can't try to catch up to that. But, you know, people have said the same thing with Apple, you know, like, oh, the iPhone. But, you know, Android phones will catch up next year to it. But in some ways, Apple still has this edge up on this premium hardware that, you know, I would say now Samsung is definitely caught up to and Huawei is caught up to, but it took years for it to happen. And some would still swear that Apple makes overall better hardware that's a little bit more refined. And so I think that's the one leg up here that Microsoft will have. I will say the developer story is going to be really interesting. We don't know all the story behind that. Some current speculation, and it's not just wild speculation, there's a lot of hints of this. And this is going to be really interesting. And let's see if it happens at Microsoft Build next year, that Microsoft may have figured out a way to get UWP apps to run on Android using JavaScript. And so I'm just putting that out there now. It's something to look out for. If that happens, though, that's really an interesting thing that I don't think a lot of people would necessarily see coming. But Microsoft's always talked about its bridges, its way to take apps and run them on different platforms. It's usually how to run them on Windows, but they always saw them as two-way streets. It was a way to also get Windows stuff onto other systems. We see that with Fluent Design. So that may be something to look out for that could be a really interesting Trojan horse that people may not see coming that will happen next year.
Can I just be like the devil's advocate here? Why does Microsoft want that? Why would developers want that? I understand that you can convert a UWP app is, for all intents and purposes, a web app that has been optimized for Windows that links into a bunch of Windows APIs, but there is still a nativeness to a UWP app, right? Like it still is supposed to look good on Windows. Android has all those apps. You know, if you're looking at a Slack app, you have the native app on Android, and you also have the UWP app on on Windows. What's the advantage to Microsoft as opposed to just doubling down on getting developers to build or modify really good Android apps for the dual screen experience?
It's a little bit of both. If there wasn't a Surface Neo, I think it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But because Neo and Duo look very similar and they have to have the same sort of, you can run apps on either one of them right now and they'll be fine. Like you don't need to rewrite your Android app for Duo to get the dual screen thing. They showed us the Kindle app already snaps between the two panels and will go full screen, and it basically works as is. What they want, though, is something like what they've already done with Outlook, where Outlook runs in one panel, and when you click a link, it knows to automatically open up in the second panel. So that sort of smart awareness. Now, you write about, you know, like, why would you want to bring UWP apps to Android? And it's not because Android's lacking for apps. It's not so much, although there's some use cases there. I would love to see MyTube, for instance, brought over to Android, because it's pretty much the best YouTube app out there. But it's not so much about the full app experience. It's about the shared APIs. Because then if they can figure out a way to bring over some of that technology to Android app development, it makes their job a lot easier. Because then developers can, you know, put in this dual screen support a lot easier. And it would work for both devices. And so it's more about a shared library, not necessarily the shared whole app experience. And that's really where Microsoft sees a lot of development going. It's not about, people think of UWP as sort of this whole app experience. And that's the way it kind of was for years. But what's really turned into now is a piecemeal experience where developers can take bits of it and put it into their app. So developers now can take, for instance, design aspects of UWP and put it into their Win32 older apps. And so it's just mixing and matching. So devs don't need to rewrite their apps to leverage UWP. They could just use bits of it. So this could actually help Android by bringing features over. But I mean, it's all speculation. But I think that's where Microsoft sees a lot of this technology going, is trying to make the lives easier for devs. Because if you're a developer, you still have to choose. Do I want to do Android? Do I want to do iOS? And then you have Windows 10. You know, it's probably on the bottom of the list. But if you can just give devs a library of tools and they can build their apps from a single repository and pick the bits they want for each of those platforms, it streamlines their development and removes that barrier of having to choose between those platforms.
Michael, where you cover basically every major launch, right? You cover Windows laptops, you cover Android phones,
yes.
And you've seen the delta getting, you know, smaller and smaller between everything that would be construed mobile, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just a fact. And we have the Fold now, which kind of it balances between a tablet and a phone fairly well. I mean, if you're not puncturing it with your fingernail, it's fine.
Right.
So what are you thinking about the position of this form factor in the market a year from now when this phone is released? Where do you see it slotting in? Is it a primary phone for a very small number of people? Is it a secondary phone or tablet for even smaller number of people? Or is this a mainstream product that you and other YouTubers are going to use as daily drivers? I know you can't speculate that far ahead, maybe, but when you saw it, when you heard about it, when you read about it, what is interesting to you about it?
That's the tricky part, because you're right. I mean, this year-long runway makes it so difficult to evaluate. I mean, there are some things that I already know. The hardcore nerds who might serve, and myself included, like no shade, you know, the hardcore geeks who are going to be talking about this thing for the next year are already saying, wow, you know, those bezels, you know, that hinge. Like, there are things about this design that, if you haven't seen it in person, look kind of not kludgy, but, you know, maybe undercooked or maybe dated. And that is not going to get any better in 11 months from now or 10 months from now. You know what I mean? So I think there are legit concerns there. And I think this faces the same challenges as a device like the Galaxy Fold, which is like, okay, all the other things about it, all the other wonderful things about it aside, it is very obviously for a very small number of people and in a very first generation sense. I also think that if the Surface Duo did not have the Surface branding, it would not be getting A, the attention, and B, the respect that it's currently being afforded. The Surface line has been very successful for Microsoft. I count myself as an admirer of most of its products. I think with two or three exceptions over the past 7 years, Surface products have been amazing. They've been some of the best Windows machines you can get. So this is, you know, cashing on that on that legacy of success, but I think it's very risky because it's not a Windows product. You know, it's an Android product, and we've seen Android products just like this. Again, God knows, I don't think about ZTE very often, but they deserve the credit. The Axon M, from a hardware perspective, a few compromises aside, was a very compelling device. Right. But I think I said at the end of my review video for that thing, I'm like, actually, I don't know what I said. somebody should make a supercut about how I'm a hypocrite or something. I don't know. I feel like the minute I got done with that video, that was one of those phones where I was like, okay, I never need to touch this again. I'm fine. Android isn't expecting this second screen, so it's a little kludgy. You know, you have to deal with this one camera setup. You can only use it in certain different ways, blah, blah, blah. And the Duo is going to have a lot of those same challenges. I really hope Microsoft is able to use this coming year to work closely with Google to finally solve some of these problems that multi-screen devices and foldable devices continue to have.
Yeah, I think that's really important just because, and Microsoft, that's the one thing I'll give them credit for. They're absolutely aware that what's driving all this and what would drive the success of both of these devices is not so much, oh, look, the hardware, it's super nice and premium and it folds and does some things that other phones currently don't do or other tablets don't do. They also know that really what's going to drive this is the user experience good? Does it do something that's not there? And that's why they said they're announcing this stuff like a year in advance so they can get this developer story out there. They can work with their partners in the open. They can bring people along for that ride, kind of get feedback. You know, there's some talk that maybe at Build, they may give out developer versions of this hardware to get the ball rolling. And that's sort of the difference, I think, with ZTE, which was, yeah, they were ahead of the time, but they just did the hardware part. At least now in 2019, going to 2020, Google is very much aware of this rise of dual screens and is building in support for it. And so so the environment's a lot different. But I would say Microsoft is definitely aware that in order for this to work, and it needs to be a good user experience. And this is one thing that they've learned from Apple, which is why they're doing their own hardware here. And with Windows 10X, why they're doing their own software and hardware to make sure that there's a unified single experience there that's actually different from anything else on the market.
That might be interesting to see. You frequently forget because we're on this segmented, we're on the Android Central podcast, right? So all I've been thinking about is Duo. I'm now thinking about Neo in the same breath as Duo. These are products that are going to be on the market at the same time. Yes, they will run different operating systems. They'll be very different, but I do wonder if there will be some common UI carryover. You know, if there's an app you want to run on both screens and you hit a particular button, does that button look the same on the Duo and the Neo? In other words, does Microsoft continue to de-emphasize the difference between Android and Windows in terms of, no, well, you know, it's a Surface of a different category, so Surface things should look like Surface things. That's going to be interesting to see.
They can do that, too. Part of the launcher, which is going to be Microsoft launcher, but well, it's not the current Microsoft launcher for Android that'll be on Duo, but that team is working on a custom launcher for Duo. And it allows them to bring over elements of Fluent Design, and they've been doing that sort of throughout their apps too. So they do have this ability to just sort of, and we don't know what the full skin is going to be like necessarily, but that's why there's already confusion with when you look at the Duo and the Neo, people are like, oh, wait, it's running the same OS. They purposely do look similar. Mm-hmm. And yeah, with the apps and services and what Microsoft would call the Microsoft Graph, kind of connecting them together, the difference, I should be clear here, Microsoft doesn't, there was a report, you know, Wired did an interview with Satya Nadella, and he was talking about how, you know, Windows as a platform is not their main thing anymore. And it's kind of true. They're really trying to be platform agnostic. They see the platform as sort of disappearing into the background. The future is about services and connecting things through the cloud and, you know, the graph, which I know is an abstract word, but it really is about these APIs and connecting up to services that allows these devices to be more unified. So they're trying to break down the barriers between people picking operating systems. In the end, it really won't matter if you just want that similar experience across all devices. And it's been their mantra for the last 2-3 years, much to the chagrin of Windows Phone users who are like, why are you bringing all this stuff over to Android and iOS? But that's why, because they want to eliminate barriers. They don't care about the platform as much anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it bluntly, and maybe you can correct me, but you know, there's a reason Google and Microsoft are willing to work together now when in the past they may not have been. Google understands where its bread is buttered, and it hasn't been able to make a lot of money from products like Pixel. So let's get our services, which make us the most amount of money, onto as many Microsoft products as possible, or work with Microsoft to ensure that Google services run well and that Android runs well on Surface hardware, and vice versa, right? Microsoft does not make so much money on Windows. It makes its money on Office, on Azure, on the services that power Windows. And this is all just, for lack of a better word, synergy. You know, it's massive companies coming together to find ways that they can work together without undermining their core businesses.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's it is definitely, it's a better environment for consumers. Like, whatever side you pick on, it's just better when all these companies kind of cooperate. Something, you know, I think a lot of us have been asking for years. The whole Google-Microsoft thing has been very detrimental to Microsoft. A lot of people ascribe, I mean, Windows Phone failed for a variety of reasons, but one of those was the lack of Google support. They just refused to put any apps on it. And even when they did, they were quickly blocked or removed. So it was a very frustrating thing. But now we're living in sort of different times. I don't know. I'm kind of happy for it, but we'll have to see where it all goes. It's obviously, you know, an uphill battle for, I think, both companies to try to get this out there, but it is the future in a lot of ways.
So, final thoughts. What do you want the Surface Duo to be priced at? What would make sense for this product in 2020? I'll start with you, Michael.
Oh, man, it's crazy. I haven't thought about it thanks to that year-long runway too, right? But if it was going to come out, here's what I expect. I expect Microsoft is going to put a premium on it because it's a Surface device. It has a lot of expensive hardware in it. But again, it's trading on the Surface name. They have never been cheap products. And with few exceptions, they've always earned that high price point. So I'm saying it would not surprise me to see them try to move these at $1,200 to $1,300. I think it will probably, because it's first gen, it will probably deliver an experience that's more around the $999 or $1,100 price point. But I think they'll put a little premium on it.
I feel like this is the Price is Right.
Yeah, right?
If you get under,
I'm
going to
go $1 higher. No. I see actually $1,499.
Oh, yeah. You're going to $1,500? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I see $1,500 as the magic number, whereas I could see Surface Neo, the larger Windows 10 tablet, hitting $2,000.
Woo. At starting.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's $1,899, maybe. I don't know. It's really hard because we don't know, you know, we don't have much reference for a dual screen tablet of that size or a PC that size. It's going to run an Intel chip too. So it's, you know, there's a lot more kind of going on there. And it has LTE on board. That's not cheap, all that. The good news, though, and this is where at least for the Neo makes a little bit more sense to have a high price tag, is it's, you do get to ride on that Surface premium thing. But I can tell you for certainty that HP, Asus, Dell, and Lenovo, we've already seen Lenovo's single foldable device, are all going to be running Windows 10X, and that's going to be coming out same time as this device. And that's always how the models worked with Microsoft. It's like people, you know, a lot of people will balk at the price of a Surface One. They're like, I'll just go buy an HP device. And HP will be like, here we are, lower price tag. Even, hey, look, we even got this other cool feature that Microsoft didn't do. And that's where that ecosystem builds up from. So that's how that story rolls out. Duo may be a little bit more interesting in terms of pricing, but you know, you already have Samsung setting the bar here for $2,000 for its Fold, and isn't the Mate X even more expensive than that? So I feel like anything below $2,000 at this point is kind of a victory.
And just, you know, finally, is this something that Microsoft will kind of look back on, or maybe you look back on in, on behalf of Microsoft, as a turning point for the company? Like, do you have confidence that this will be a sea change for the Surface line in general?
Yeah, I think it, I mean, so there was, I retweeted on last week from, I think it was The Register, did a story talking about how 2019 was the year Microsoft gets out of the Surface business. And that was from 2017. And so, like, it's clear, like, you know, I've been saying for a couple of weeks now that this event was going to be the biggest event for Microsoft since 2015 when Windows 10 launched. And they had like two phones, they had like three Surfaces, they had the band. It was like a whole hodgepodge of stuff. And that's what happened here. So I do think this is a sea change. Them returning back to phone, I think, is a big deal. Obviously, them doing Android is a big deal, but it also goes to back up this idea that Microsoft's a software company at its heart. The hardware is there to demonstrate the capabilities of that software. But at the end of the day, they're about software and services, and they're going to be putting their stuff everywhere. They're working with AMD, Qualcomm, Intel. They're working with Android. They're working with iOS. They're doing Linux now. I mean, they're in gaming. They're on PCs. They're on handheld. Like, they're literally everything, holographic computers. So they're putting their stuff everywhere. Having this mobile picture complete is just another, you know, part of that story. And Bader, you and I were talking about before this, the call, about how I have confidence, no reporting on this yet, but I have confidence that they're going to do a wearable next. They have to do some sort of Surface wrist wearable watch type thing. And I don't want to call it a watch because I feel like it's not going to be just a smart watch model. Again, they're going to have to think of something different there. But if you look at having a dual screen phone that folds up in your pocket, it's a pain in the butt if a call comes in or even a notification comes in. You got to pull this thing out, open it up. Oh, no, I don't care. Put it back in your pocket. Are you going to do that every single time a call or a notification comes in? Of course not. So other companies have figured this out. You have a wearable, gives you the screen. And so they could just use Google Wear for this. But, you know, I think we're all on the same page here that Google Wear is sort of not living up to expectations. Slash, it doesn't seem like Google is serious about continuing it.
Yeah, it's garbage.
Yeah, and so I see them doing, and they already just announced Surface earbuds, which that's the other trifecta of that story. Apple knows this. They got AirPods, they have the watch, and they have the phone. They all work together in a seamless experience. You can actually take the call on your earbuds and your watch while leaving your phone in your pocket. Samsung figured this out. They too have that same ecosystem. Huawei does it. So if you look at Microsoft's vision video from 2015, they show like a wearable concept, and go watch that video. It's called Microsoft Vision from 2015. And if you watch that video, you'll see Surface Dial. You'll see screens that fold and go with you. You're going to see basically the Surface earbuds back then too. And so that video is not just like fantasy. It's like they're actually doing a lot of that stuff in the video or bringing it to life. So I see a wearable as their next future, and that's only possible because of this Surface Duo. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to watch that video right after we get off this, because the way you describe it, I'm like, you know, if this is a company that has a 10-year vision, like most major companies do, you know, this is the product of that 10-year vision. They may have been working on it in earnest for 3 years, but the Duo has been in concept for far longer than that. It has
sure, to with the courier. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, thank you so much. It's been awesome having you. Daniel, tell people where they can find you on the internet.
Oh, sure. Just find me at Daniel_Rubino, R-U-B-I-N-O, on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, I write and do videos at Windows Central.
Awesome. And Michael?
People can find me at TheMrMobile, TheMrMobile, on Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
And if you don't already follow and subscribe, you're doing life wrong, because both of you need to be more well known. We got to get you to million subscribers, Michael.
Got to tell me about it, dude. That's all I'm waiting for. After that, I just pina coladas on the beach every day.
There you go.
All right,
it'll happen.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.